came here for my Master's in Planetary Science. I've been to many, many space events in London over the last 4 or 5 years, and I did a podcast with Tim Peake himself back in 2012, before he was quite such a household name as he is today. So I'm very glad to be back here for his 10 minutes later.
So are we opening to questions, or...? Okay, so I guess opening to the floor to the questions about space science and Tim himself, so open to the questions.
Has anyone ever cried in space, and if so, what happens to the tears?
I don't know if they've cried. I should say that when the astronauts work Monday to Friday, 8 till 6 in the evening, and one of the things that they do in their spare time at the weekends is watch movies. And I can't speak for all of the astronauts when they've flown, but I know that I've shed a tear at a movie or two, so I'm guessing that perhaps some crying has been done in space. But one astronaut, Chris Hadfield, who was in space a couple of years ago, he answered that question, and he made himself cry, and he showed you what happened. And what happens is that the water, or the tears, when they come out of your eyes, they stick to your face, because up in space, you can't, well, when you're orbiting the Earth, you can't feel the effects of gravity because you're in free fall, which means that water floats, and the water surface tension is the sort of predominant force of water, so it just sticks to your face because of the surface tension. And so if you kept crying and crying and crying, you'd just get balls of water around your eyes. Good question.
Can you see snow from space?
So I'll take the easy questions, that's absolutely fine. So I think it's easy anyway. So the simple answer is it doesn't snow in space, but you can see snow that's on the ground. And I don't know if any of you remember, so maybe some of the adults here, a couple of years back, the UK got covered in snow. The entire country was covered in snow. It wasn't actually that much, but, you know, we all deal with about 0.5 millimetre of snow, so it's a foot of snow. The country got covered in snow, and there was a wonderful satellite image. The sky was clear over most of the UK, and you could see the UK white. So I don't think, you wouldn't see individual snowflakes, you wouldn't see it snowing, but you can see the effect of the snow laying on the ground, absolutely.
If you were to cut yourself in space, what would happen to the blood and how would you stop it from flowing?
Where's the microphone?
So the astronauts on board the space station have a lot of medical supplies up there. You can't send a doctor up to space. You can't send a plumber up to space. You can't send an electrician. So they are trained to take care of all eventualities, really, which is one of the reasons their training takes so long to go up there. So if you cut yourself in space, it would be just like if you were crying in space. The blood would sort of just form a ball on your skin. But the processes inside your body that allow blood to stop and to clot, they still work. But they have a medical kit. They would just apply a plaster and carry on. If there was something more serious happened in space, if somebody was really taken ill, the astronauts are trained. We've got doctors in mission control who can help them and talk them through any medical procedures. But always the question you have to ask, if somebody gets really sick, is it more risky to treat them in space and leave them up there or to bring them back home? And when you come back to Earth, you have to go through a re-entry process. And that's a pretty bumpy ride. Takes a few hours to get back. If you come back unexpectedly, you'll land somewhere in the middle of the Kazakh steppe, and it would take a little while for people to come and rescue you. And astronauts, when they land back on Earth, some of them describe it as a controlled car crash, because you have parachutes that bring you down and rockets that kind of cushion that last little bit of landing, but it's still quite a thump. So if you get really sick in space, which should you do? Fortunately, so far, actually, in the history of space, no one's ever been really very sick, but I'm sure there's been the odd cut finger or two. But we do make sure that the safety of the crew is very important to us. We make sure that we don't intentionally have any sharp objects anywhere. We always make sure that they're protected as much as possible. Good question.
When you first had a job, and you were at school, why did you like science so much?
Um, Well, I've always looked like science at school. I was pretty bad at languages and then everything else, but I really enjoyed science and maths at school. But I think it's often the case that something triggers your interest, and I can remember as a child, you know, just walking through the back from the car park at night with my father and just looking up at the stars and just in wonder. And I think sometimes it's an interest in astronomy, and I think you were saying about the viewing Saturn through the telescopes, that triggers your interest, and we're hoping that quite a few people who have been involved or watched him, you know, will get interested in science in that regard. So
for me, I'd always been interested in space and physics and so on. I did a maths degree, and I slipped into accountancy as being one of the biggest graduate employers because I didn't quite see all the options out there at the time. But then I went to see the final space shuttle launch back in 2011, which really triggered my interest. And I looked around and saw how much actually goes on in Europe in the space scene and wanted to get involved. So I went and did a master's in planetary science, which led to my PhD. So it's never too late to change your mind either and go back and try different paths and see what interests you.
Somebody had a heart attack on board the ISS. What resuscitation equipment would they use?
They've got exactly the same sort of thing in space as we've got back here on Earth. They've got the sort of defibrillation pedals. They have a special stretcher that you can get up. The tricky thing in space is that if you unfortunately were to be in that situation, you will float. So you have to strap the person down before you can use the pedals. Here on Earth, you just make sure they were on the floor. Then somebody's also come up, as a British person called Simon Evans, he's come up with a way to do CPR in space by sort of, if you imagine floating, you sort of get your legs around the person and then steady yourself against something, and that allows you to do CPR. We've got doctors in mission control, but so far everybody's been okay. We do make sure that the astronauts, when they fly, are as healthy as we can make them. And indeed, one of the selection criteria when people are chosen to be astronauts is that they're generally healthy. We look for things that you can't change when looking for astronauts. We can teach you things. We can teach you Russian. Tim himself said that was one of the hardest things he had to do. But we made sure that everybody who was selected is a generally sort of healthy person. So hopefully, fingers crossed, everybody's going to be fine in space.
Everybody in the UK turned their lights off and on. Would they see it from the International Space Station?
So in answer to that, come back soon.
Guys, can you give the expert panel a round of applause for answering your questions, please? If you have any burning questions, then later on after the live link, the expert panel will come back again and answer any further questions that you may have. I am now going to hand over to Kieran Morgan, who is in charge of the whole ARIS team here and has put all of this together and has been here for the last 2 days preparing. He's going to take you through the procedures and just prepare you ready for what's going to happen next. So can I introduce Kieran Morgan?
Hi everyone, I'm Tim Peake and welcome on board the International Space Station.
I got that last night, it was 10 gigs of data download, but we worked on it today. Right, hello everybody and welcome to the City of Norwich Schools and to the ARIS contact with the International Space Station. A little bit about what ARIS is. ARIS, Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, is a group of volunteers from around the world who basically come together. They're all radio amateurs. They've got an interest in radio communications, especially communications using satellites. And we try to link students in different schools all around the world with astronauts on board the station with just one goal in mind, to try and influence you and inspire you to follow science as a career. I did electrical engineering as my background, and I've had great fun doing lots of things. Carlos is going to give me a lot of grief later because I made a few mistakes in the setup this morning, so we went back and checked everything, but everything's okay, and we are currently looking forward to a contact in T-minus 16 minutes. So, couple of things. We've got an awful lot of equipment here, and what I wanted to do was to just talk you through what we've got and also introduce the team as well. A pretty small team, and we're running around the countryside, giving 10 schools the opportunity to talk to Tim. I'm the UK lead for ARIS itself. On the radios today, we've got Carlos, G3VHS. He's going to be running there, and the arms are going to be going like this all over the shop, hopefully, and giving me a lot of abuse later. He's the one that's looking after the radios, and essentially, this is what they've got. It's just that bit. Forget about everything else. It's just that little bit in the middle. That's the thing that's going to do the job for us. However, one of the things we wanted to do was to make more than just the people in this room see the contact itself. So we have the help of Noel, G8GTZ, Phil, M0DNY, and Frank, M0, I'm going to forget it again, AEU. And what they are doing is providing the ability to take the pictures from the cameras and from the audio from the space station and stream it out onto the internet so lots more people can actually see it. Now, let's see if we can warm you up a bit. Anybody heard of the heads and tails game? Yep, okay, up you go. Okay. If you know what flight mode is, hands on your head. If you've got no idea, hands on your tails. No, you got to pick one. Okay. I forgot what I said now. Flight mode, yeah. Right, if you've got hands on your tails, sit down, please. No, sorry, I got that the wrong way round. I got that the wrong way round, sorry. If you've got your hands on your head, sit down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the bit me. Okay. One of the things that we do is we've all got mobile phones, tablets, iPads, whatever, Android stuff. How many of you have been in a room when across a PA system you just sort of heard a touch sound? Okay, that's these jobs. So one of the things I would like everybody to do now, please, is to switch all mobile phones, all tablets to flight mode. Okay? You can still use your phone to take pictures, but all phones to flight mode, please. Oh, by the way, you can sit back down again. Right. I think we'll do another game of it. So everybody back up again. Okay. So we keep hearing an awful lot of numbers being thrown around recently. Oh, it's not bust again, is it? Because that's where you're going. Okay. Now, some of the things that we're going to do is when we do actually end up speaking to Tim, one of the things we like to do at the end of it is to really give him a good round of applause so that he knows we've appreciated the fact that he's taken the time today to actually talk to us. And Tim, I've got to refer to this guy as Earth Tim because Space Tim, I was getting too confused earlier. But Earth Tim, at the end of the contact, is going to say everyone wants to show their appreciation or something like that. And when he does that, I want as much noise as possible, clapping, cheering or whatever. And I would like to practice that now for a little bit. So I'm going to count down from 3 to 1 to 0. And I want to see how much noise you can make, okay? So 3... Okay, let's try again and let's see if we can really get Carlos to hear it. Okay? 3, 2, 1, go. Okay. Even louder. Ready? 3, 2, 1, go. Marvellous. Right. I've got Carlos. Okay. Got a little story for you, and I just want you to listen to it, and then I'm going to ask you a question at the end of it. So, imagine you're in a dark room, and you're fast asleep. Your alarm clock goes off, and you switch on your bedside light. You also grab the remote for your TV. And switch the TV on so you can hear what the news is. You get yourself ready for work, for school, whatever, and you pick a Bluetooth headset, and you get your bike out, and you start cycling off into school. Little accident, you fall off, you have to go to hospital, and when you're there, they want to take an X-ray of your arm. And while you're waiting for all the tests and everything to conclude, you decide to go on your mobile phone and sort of surf the web a little bit. And eventually you get back home and you make yourself some dinner really easily by just throwing a baked potato into the microwave oven or something. What's any of that got to do with radio? So, yeah, pretty much. Virtually everything that I said there, in some way, shape, form or another, uses something called the electromagnetic spectrum. And it's something that we enjoy playing with because we've got certain bits of it and we can talk through satellites with it. But the electromagnetic spectrum goes from not moving at all, DC as we call it, all the way up to gamma radiation, things that they can do sort of real damage to cancer cells and everything. But in that, you've missed one bit.
Oh, about the X-ray.
That's included, but you've missed one bit. Nope, I'm thinking earlier. So think back. So, yep. Yep. Why is the alarm clock associated with radio? Huh?
Because it wakes you up, like alarm clock sometimes, and counts music on it, like pictures of the music.
Great advertising. yeah? But what bit of the alarm clock woke you up? Noise. The buzzer, yeah. That's using the electromagnetic spectrum. It's the audio part of the electromagnetic spectrum. It's the bit we as humans can hear. And that's the bit That's fine. One end of the spectrum. But there's another one that I mentioned that no one said anything about. It's about the chap up there. Nope. Nope. That's included in it, but it's not the one I'm thinking of. Yep. Nope. Nope. Sorry? Thank you. Light. Light. It's part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And if you get to do lots of physics, you get to do an awful lot of radio waves and radio particles. And, great fun. But it's just demonstrating that radio and the electromagnetic spectrum is everywhere in our lives today. Right. So what are we actually doing here today? Today is probably the biggest experiment you'll ever take part in your school life. And we've talked about, well, it's been mentioned of the speed of the space station, 28,000 kilometers an hour, 17,500 miles per hour. And anybody know the speed of light in miles per second? That stumped everybody. Go for it. Thank you. Yep. Any idea how long it takes light in 1 second, or how many times around the Earth if light could bend at that speed to go around the Earth in 1 second? 7. A beam of light could go around the Earth 7 times in 1 second. We're going to be connecting with radio waves, which travel at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, with the space station that's traveling at 17,500 miles per hour. And that's quite a job to sort of track and be really precise and everything. So we employ an awful lot of computer equipment to help us. But the easiest way I've got to show you is that, can I have 3 volunteers? But you've got to be really good at throwing the ball, catching the ball, and hand-eye coordination. Go for yourself, and yourself in the middle, and the little chap up in blue. Right, who's good at throwing? Who's good at different question. Who's good at catching? Right. I want you to go over there. Okay? You take that and go over there. And I want you to take the torch. And if we can get the lights dimmed, I want you to go up onto the steps. Go about 4 or 5 steps up. So there's a little demonstration of what we're actually going to try and achieve. Now, sorry, I forgot to ask your name. Reese. It's going to throw the ball up in the air like that across to Lola, and she's going to catch it. And, Robin is going to try and shine the torch on the light, and as it's travelling across, keep the light on the ball at all times. Okay? Ready to try it? Can we knock the light down a bit more? There we go. Okay? So, go on then, off you go. How did that? Yeah? Okay, back again. Okay, that's all right. Thanks very much, guys, and well done. But it's demonstrating the principle of what we're about to do, okay? But it's an experiment, and what can happen to experiments? Exactly. So we have to prepare for what could happen. We don't know if it's going to happen. And all the work that we've been doing for the last couple of days has been exactly that. We're trying to prepare and cover for the majority of the things that we can control. But there are things that we cannot control. And what we will do is we will react as best we can if anything like that happens. So the important thing is, it's an experiment. Okay? Thanks very much, guys. Okay, so, one minute, thanks, Dallas. Okay, so, it's an experiment. You guys have picked, they've been picked for the questions that you gave. As we said earlier in the practice runs, good luck, smile, enjoy it, okay? It's a really special moment. And for the people in the audience that have seen these contacts in the past, they'll hopefully agree with me that you don't quite know what you're going to have and what's going to happen, but when it's over, you want to do it again and again and again. But you can't, because the space station will be halfway down Africa by that time. Okay? So, enjoy it. Right. So, Tim is going to start calling in a moment, and we're going to see if we can talk to Tim.
Scheduled contact with the ISS. Over. GB1SS, Golf Bravo 1 Sierra. This is GB2 CNS, Golf Bravo 2 Charlie November Sierra. Listening and standing by for a scheduled contact with the International Space Station. Over.
Hello, Golf Bravo 2, Charlie November Sierra. This is Golf Bravo 1, Sierra. I read you 555. How may over?
GB1SS, this Golf Bravo 1, Sierra. This is GB2 CNS, Golf Bravo 2, Charlie November, Sierra. Listening and standing by for a scheduled contact with the International Space Station.
Hello, Golf Bravo 2, Charlie November, Sierra. This is Golf Bravo 1, Sierra.
Hi Tim, this is Tim, M6HDJ. Are you ready for your first question? Over.
It's great to be talking to you in Norwich, and yes, I'm ready for my first question. Over.
Hi, this is Maddie. What do you do if you cut yourself really badly in space? Over.
Hi Maddie, good question. We do actually need some nice sometimes up here, so we do have to be careful. If we get a really bad cut, then we could actually give ourselves some local anaesthetic and stitch it up with the help of some doctors back in ground control if we need to. Over.
Hi, this is Austin. Are there any protocols or guidance in place if George Clooney comes knocking on the front door as he did in the film Gravity? Over.
I'm aware we're the only six human beings in space up here, so if anybody comes knocking on our hatch, I'm not opening it. Over.
Tim, it's Kevin M0XTD. We have you on Ham TV. Give us a wave. Here's your next question.
Hi, this is Sophie. What experiment would you like to add to your mission based on the experiences you have had? Over.
Hi, Sophie. I would like to see us doing more of the medical research, some more vaccines and looking into new drug methods as well. I think that's some of the most exciting research we're doing up here. Over.
Hi, this is Matt. In what ways does the lack of natural sunlight and fresh air affect you on the ISS? Over.
Hi Max, I love opening the windows in the cupola when I'm in Node 3 or in the Japanese module. I love the sunshine coming through the windows, and it does make a difference. It does kind of brighten up your day and make you feel better. So many day and night cycles. Over.
Hi, this is Charlotte. How do you get changed in space? Won't your clothes go everywhere? Over.
Hi Charlotte, they do go everywhere. We have to use bungees, or we bungee our clothes down so they don't float off and you don't lose them. Over.
Hi, this is Eden. One of the experiments you are conducting in space is to measure fluid shifts in the body. In what way does this help us back on Earth? Over.
Hi Eden, that's a great question. Fluid shift really kicks off the whole process of the changes to our body. It's because of the fluid shift we get greater pressure in our head and we start to lose bone density as well. So that triggers all the changes, and it's by changing things in our body that we can learn about our body and we can investigate these things. Over.
Hi, this is Thomas. With the basic design of the current spacecraft dating back decades, where do you think the next leap forward in spacecraft technology will occur? Over.
Hi Thomas, yes, I mean we're playing with basic rules of physics and gravity here and laws of motion, so I think that we're going to see big changes to our spacecraft in terms of our transit to Mars and transit to Moon, but in terms of getting to low Earth orbit, I don't think we're going to see many big changes that we have in current spacecraft design, over.
Hi, this is Emily. How different was the training compared to the experience of actually launching into space? Over.
I believe the training was so good that it really prepared us for launching into space, and there are very few differences between what we were training for on ground and how we live and work up here in space. Over.
Hi, this is Millie. With improving technology on Earth, are there experiments that you are currently carrying out in space that could one day be repeated on Earth? Over.
Yes, there are loads of experiments up here that we're doing that could be repeated on Earth. I think that it's going to be a long time before we manage to sort of counter gravity for a long period of time on Earth. So we use parabolic flights and drop towers. But the benefit of being up here in low Earth orbit is, of course, we have microgravity continuously. So we can do those experiments for a very long time. But we do repeat the experiments back on Earth, of course, to see the changes, to see what's different between space and Earth. Over.
Hi, this is Erin. Which materials being developed with the electromagnetic levitator will have the largest impact on the development of greener living? Over.
Hi, Erin. Well, I think the metal alloys are the one area of research that are going to have the big impact on greener living, because that will affect how our engines are designed, and in particular our commercial aircraft turbine blades and turbine engines, for example, which will cut down fuel production and cut down fuel usage and have a good impact in aviation. Over.
Hi, this is Maddie asking you this question. Since being in space, what has been your most amusing dream? Over.
Hi Maddie, do you know, I haven't dreamt much up here in space. And when I do, I dream of Earth. I haven't yet dreamt of being in space. And I think it's because we sleep quite heavily up here, actually. I sleep quite well here in space. Over.
Hi, this is Austin asking Libby's question. If everyone in Britain turned their lights on and off at the same time, would you see it from space? Over.
Hi Austin, yes, you definitely would see it. You know, we would see a small village if you turned your lights on and off. It's amazing that the lights really stand out very well from space. Certainly a major city turning their lights on and off would stand out very clearly. Over.
Hi, this is Sophie asking Ella's question. Which part of the Earth do you like orbiting over the most and why? Over.
Hi Sophie, I love orbiting over Africa. It just looks beautiful from space. It's like flying over a canvas of art. And also northern Canada is beautiful, especially right now with all the ice and even the sea is frozen up there. Over.
Hi, this is Max asking Amy's question. With sunrise and sunset occurring 16 times a day on board the ISS, does it have any noticeable effect on your body clock? Over.
It does. You know, if I'm looking in the cupola late at night when it's bright sunshine, it does take me a while to get to sleep, so I try not to do that. You have to kind of try and trick your body that it's nighttime when it's time to go to sleep. Over.
Hi. Hi, this is Charlotte asking Mimi's question. How does being in space make you relate to your place in the universe? Over.
Hi Charlotte, that's a great question. You know, I mean, being up in space gives a different perspective and it makes you realise how vast the solar system is, how vast the universe is, And also it makes you realise that our planet, you know, it has no borders. It's got massive weather systems that affect all continents. And so it does give you that perspective of the planet as a whole. Over.
Hi, this is Eden asking Bruno's question. Is there a song or a piece of art that you think reproduces the feeling of being in zero gravity? If so, which one? Over.
Hi, Eden. Well, there's nothing specific. Right now, for example, it might be a beautiful woman one way up and an old-handed woman the other way up. I think that's great because it makes you realise in space, of course, we have a different perspective depending on which way up we are. Over.
GB2CNS returning. That was fantastic, thank you. Everyone here would like to say a big thank you. This is GB2CNS handing back to GB1SS for the final. GB2CNS, awesome space.
It's been wonderful talking to everybody in Norwich this afternoon. Have a great day and thank you for those brilliant questions. Goodbye from the International Space Station. Out.
Well done, guys. Absolutely. And for putting somebody who's only just recently passed his amateur radio exam on the mic, well done, Tim. So, talking about experiments, we measure it by the success in terms of what we expected and what we got. We got Tim, we got him floating sideways as well, which I haven't seen yet in one of these contacts, which was really good. But more importantly, we heard him, we talked to him, we asked him questions, he replied, you heard the answers, and you can today say that you were a part of this unique experience of talking to Tim on the space station. So I think you all need a round of applause yourselves. So well done. So, one of the things that it states in the amateur radio license, when you read it, is pretty much at the beginning. It talks about self-learning. Trainee, I told you you were correct. Self-training, and it's about learning and trying things and then learning your mistakes, and trust me, I find a lot that Carlos pointed out to me today, but then going on in the next time trying better. Thomas Edison, I think, once said that you never really fail at an experiment, you just find 10,000 different ways that never work. So But the point I want to make is, what we're doing here is about learning, lifelong learning. It doesn't just happen in schools, but it carries on through your life. Most of us don't even have careers in radio or communications or anything like that. We've got completely different backgrounds, but we decided that we had an interest in radio and we taught ourselves the self-learning bit. So if we've done this as amateurs, and you've heard the word amateur radio, I think you'd probably agree that that was pretty good and professional. So, and a thought to all the school children, especially everyone else listening around the school, because I know this has been streamed into all the other classrooms as well. If that's the sort of job that we can do, and we're amateurs, what can you do if you're a professional in this area? So, in the traditional way that radio amateurs say goodbye to each other, and you've heard the expression earlier, I'm going to say, this is GB2CNS, saying 7-3s, off and clear. Thank you.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Sensation on Space to Ground 2 for WHC flush.
Go ahead on 2.
Just to let you know, the flush tank fill is complete and the flush count looks like it's 2011. It could be 1911. It's kind of halfway between 19 and 20. I would say it's closer to 2011 on the flush count.
Houston copies, thank you.
And also the bag is 70% full.
Copy that, Tim, thanks a lot.
Cleveland Station on Space to Ground 3, we're back.
Space in Cleveland, we're with you.
I think the next step is to go and remove the sample and work on the next one, is that correct?
Yes, please. It'll be sample 219, Mike.